Today is October 9th, 2013, and this is episode number 225 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, that guy who says he'll help you move, but then comes up with lame excuses like, dude, I'm sorry, I'm in another state. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM, and if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
You know, I shouldn't laugh because that's exactly the thing that that you'll be saying to me as I start our relocation of the TMO Central Towers.
Sorry, Jeff, and I'd really, really love to help you move, but I'm in another state.
Yeah. No, I understand. I get it. I'll just sit here and drink alone.
How do we manage again to be in the same studio every week when we live in different states? How does that work?
It's a really big studio.
Oh, right.
That's why we bought those shoes that have the little wheelie things in the heels for Sienna and Ainsley so that they can scoot back and forth quickly across the studio.
Sierra, my friend.
It's an intern. What difference does it make?
That's a good... Yeah, we're talking about you. Go back to whatever it is you do over there. Good Lord.
That's right. Don't look at me like that, Sebulba.
And stop moving stuff around. Stupid interns.
Sepia. He drives me crazy.
So, you know, somewhere there is a child who is named Sepia or Sepia. Is it Sepia?
Depends on how the family chooses to pronounce it.
But there is, in this country, someone who has given their adorable, precious snowflake the unique name of Sepia.
Probably with the middle name of Snowflake.
Indeed.
Sepia Snowflake Trail Dancer Jones.
So how you doing?
I'm doing all right.
I'm not sure about that.
What, just because you don't see a drink on my desk today?
Yeah, where is your podcasting juice?
It's in the other room right now. I wasn't able to get any into the studio in time to record.
Ah.
So, you know, if I seem kind of cranky during the show today, it's simply because I haven't been properly sedated.
Fair enough. I'm with you there or something.
Or something.
Yeah.
So as long as we're here and we finished berating the interns.
Yeah.
What do you want to talk about?
Well, we have several things that we could talk about. I was thinking that we'd start with this this next media event that Apple's going to be holding.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I was assuming you were going to say something like Lego Star Wars, and you went with Apple Media Event. And I was like, fine, we'll stay on topic. So, yeah, the 22nd.
22nd. All Things D started this out. John Pajakowski. No idea.
Oh, my God. I never realized that was the proper pronunciation. I've been saying it wrong all this time.
But I never say it out loud. I always type it.
Yeah. So it actually...
copy-paste it.
Yeah. So basically the way it sounds to you every time is clackety-clackety-clackety-clack.
Exactly. I think it's Pajakowski, actually. Something like that. Anyway, he's a fantastic reporter. He's got great sources. I am usually interested in his perspective. Good guy. I don't know that he's a guy. I've never met the guy.
But we'll assume he's a good guy.
Can you please take this shovel away from me?
No, this is great. I can't wait to see where this goes.
No. Anyway, John Pajakowski.
John.
All Things D reported that unnamed sources are saying that Apple's next media event is going to be October 22nd. We know that it won't, we don't know much of anything except for the fact that it's obvious it'll be to show off new iPads.
Right. And, of course it will.
And it would make a lot of sense for Apple to go ahead and announce the release of the new Mac Pro.
Right, which means we'll probably also get an announcement about Mavericks if they haven't ruled it out already by then.
Yeah, well, and it went to it went Golden Master this week.
Right, so we're getting really close.
Yeah, so I mean, it's waiting for a media event. It's just waiting to be released.
Right.
Which is very exciting in and of itself. And also, of course, seeing the next generation of iPads is going to be exciting. It seems like it's time for Apple to do something interesting with the iPad. The last couple of releases, the iPad 3, of course, was the Retina display.
Correct. The iPad 4 was the Lightning connector.
Right. And really, come on. That's the iPad 3.5.
Yeah.
3.1.
I mean, they did give it a processor speed boost as well.
Oh, that's true. That's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So fine. 3.7. Nonetheless, yeah, 3.7. It was essentially similar device as the iPad 3. And of course, we got the iPad mini. And so now, the only really good rumors I've seen on the new larger iPad is it's going to be thinner, which probably isn't surprising, although I hope it has good battery life. And we've gotten conflicting rumors about the iPad mini either not having a Retina display or having a Retina display.
I just find that incredibly funny. That there are two ways this could go. It could have a Retina display, or maybe not. Of course, those are the only options. It's not like they're going to change it to a three-dimensional cuneiform system. It's either Retina or not.
They could. Cuneiform is underrated.
You know, and if anyone could find a way to bring it back, it would be Apple. Nonetheless, it's either Retina or it's not. I think it will be Retina.
I think that it will. The most credible rumor that Apple wouldn't be able to do the Retina display for the iPad mini came from an analyst who said that – you covered that, didn't you?
Oh, yes, yes. I can't remember which analyst, but one of them said that Apple wasn't going to be getting displays in the quantities that it needed.
Right. And I think this is an example of what Tim Cook warned us about within the last year, about not paying too much attention to what any one supplier is saying, because Apple's supply chain is so complex that you can't get the big picture of what the company is trying to do based on leaks coming from within a particular supplier.
I'm pretty sure the exact quote that from Tim was, "Don't listen to these guys. They're talking right out of their, hey, how are you doing?" Or something like that. See, I really should have picked up some podcasting juice on the way back to the studio. Yeah,
relax you a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think that we're going to see the Retina display on the iPad. I think that Apple is, you know, when the iPad mini was released, of course, it was very successful immediately. But it was released with a lower resolution than competing devices had. And while I think that the iPad's display overall is far better than everyone else's tablet display, I don't think Apple can risk a year later not going Retina with the iPad mini.
When the mini shipped, not having a Retina display, while many people said would be the kiss of death, of course it wasn't. I don't think it was a big deal. It was totally fine. People were snapping them up. I love mine. And while, yes, I can see a difference in the display, it isn't so dramatic that it bothers me. But you're right. This time around, they need to do the Retina display on the mini, or it's...
Yeah, even if it means bumping the price up a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, they need to have that. And I think another question is going to be... So, all right, long and short, we're both on Apple's going to release this thing with a Retina display.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, even if it's available in relatively limited quantities at first, I think that it's going to happen.
I agree.
Yeah. Now, I am very curious, though, as to whether or not either or both devices will have Touch ID. And my guess is yes.
My guess is yes as well. And I think that also means we'll see the A7 processor in both.
Yeah. Well, you know, so that's interesting. So, since Apple is using the A6 in the iPhone 5C, one could make an argument that overall economies of scale work with the iPad mini having either device. Now, the rumor is that the full-size iPad will definitely have the A7. I'm at 100% on that one. That's a no-brainer.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, the question is whether or not the iPad mini also has the A7. And that's probably going to depend more on whether or not Apple wants to include Touch ID on that device than anything else.
Okay, yes, I can see that. I don't see a valid reason to skip Touch ID on the Mini.
Well, why skip it on the iPhone 5C? Why not make it a selling point across all? I mean, if they can skip it on the 5C, they can skip it on the iPad Mini.
It's a differentiating point. Apple always or has a track record of artificially creating differences like that to differentiate between products. And
yes.
I think Touch ID was left off of the 5C specifically to have a differentiating factor between its mid-range and top-range model for
iPhones. But I think that same argument could easily apply to the iPad mini. Easily apply.
It could.
I mean, I can make the counter-argument too, but I mean, my point is that doesn't rule it out for the 5C or for the iPad mini.
There are plenty of other differentiating factors between the iPad and iPad mini, like screen size. So I don't think Touch ID needs to be used as one of those factors. However, you are right. They could choose to skip it off the mini.
Well, and there's a good reason to skip it too, and that's price. Because we're not only looking at the price differential between the A7 and the A6, which is not inconsequential. I don't know what the actual prices are, but I know that there's enough going on with the A7 that it's going to cost more than the A6 to produce.
Sure.
And it also, of course, has the secure enclave and it has the M7 chip associated with it. So there are things going on with Touch ID. Plus, there's also the cost of the sensor and the sensor ring and the sapphire that covers it all. You know, those things also have a cost associated with them. So from the standpoint of keeping the iPad mini at the price point that Apple wants it, it could well be possible that they cannot do Touch ID.
All right. That's the most valid argument I have heard. And I would say that's a totally plausible argument.
All right. Well, here's another one. If Touch ID, you know, Touch ID, Dave Hamilton, my business partner here at the Mac Observer and the president of our company, has been on a tear about people referring to Touch ID as a security method when really it's a convenience feature. And I believe that he's spot on with that. But if Touch ID is also about a long play in mobile payments, the argument could be made that Apple is only really interested in introducing Touch ID on its smartphones, where they are far more likely to be used eventually with mobile payments than an iPad.
That's a good point. And to back up what you just said, the Apple Store app has never been optimized for iPad. It's always been strictly an iPhone interface.
Which is weird.
I mean, yeah, because you can walk into an Apple store with an iPad. It has a camera. You can scan product barcodes.
Well, yeah. Plus, quite frankly, the iPad is a better shopping device.
Period. Right.
The iPad mini or the iPad, but in particular the iPad.
Yeah, I agree. And so maybe Apple's long-term vision for the Apple Store app is as essentially a digital wallet Or digital transaction system. I think that's a better description.
Fair enough. Yeah, it actually is a much better description. So we're doing a whole lot of hedging here. Let's unhedge. I think that the iPad, the full-size iPad, will for sure have Touch ID, and I think that there's a reasonable chance that the iPad mini will also have it. So it's still a bit of a hedge, but I'm not hedging on the full-size iPad. I think it's going to have Touch ID.
I'm going to add a little bit more to that. Full-size iPad definitely will have that A7 processor. It will also have an improved camera this time around. And I think that Apple will be going to stereo speakers for the first time on the full-size iPad. They will be the kind of not-so-stereo-ish ones that you have on the iPad mini because they're so close together. But there will be two speakers this time.
Hmm. All right. But not on the iPad mini.
Well, the iPad mini will continue to have its stereo speakers.
Oh, does it have stereo speakers?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what do I know?
Very little.
Very little.
How many speakers the iPad mini has.
That is one of the many things I do not know.
I thought there was only a small handful of things.
No, many, many things.
Huh. You have no idea how shocked I am. Anyhow, so faster processor, probably an A7 in the mini.
Mm-hmm.
Bump in quality for the camera as well. I think we'll see a camera improvement on both iPads.
Okay.
Oh, you mean the FaceTime and the other camera?
I could have meant that either way, but I actually meant on the iPad mini and the full size iPad.
Okay. Yeah. I think we'll see a camera boost on both. And the Touch ID sensor, well, initially I was thinking it will definitely be on the mini. You now have me waffling on that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And that's based on the cost argument that you tossed out.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know one way or another which way to go on that. You know, it's interesting. By 6 weeks ago, maybe 2 months ago at this point in the iPad's product cycle, we had leaks for cases. And, you know, not cases, but the casing for the
right.
iPhone 5C.
The actual body itself.
For the 5S and the 5C. And I haven't seen diddly on new iPads.
Oh, they're out there. I've seen pictures a couple places. And the pictures show a body for the mini that looks just like the current body. Mm-hmm. And a body for the full-size iPad that looks like a big iPad mini body.
Well, and that actually makes sense because the iPad mini has got more of a tapered look on the edges, right?
Yes.
And the iPad 3 and 4 essentially have the same case.
No, they have exactly the same case. Well, except for where the connector is.
Yeah. So, you know, it does tend to use, for its mobile devices, it tends to use the same case for two generations. So it makes sense that the iPad, the full-size iPad, would borrow the same styling that the mini got last year.
Right.
And we would have seen that in March if Apple hadn't moved the schedule for the iPad, the full-size iPad, up to the fall.
Yeah, and I think the reason we saw that move was twofold. First, they really wanted to switch the iPad to the Lightning connector.
Yes.
And the processor that I think they had wanted to put in the 3 was finally available in the form they wanted.
Yeah.
So they went ahead and did that.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is I think they really wanted to move the new iPad to the fall, where it's a strategically better launch window for them.
Yeah, absolutely. They were getting hammered by the competition releasing its latest greatest in the fall for the holiday buying season, competing with what Apple had introduced in the spring. I personally thought that was catastrophic. Same thing with the iPhone, and they moved both of those to the fall.
Right. Yeah, and that really does make sense.
Yeah.
And the reason that I think Apple had launches scattered throughout the year like they did mm-hmm. before was because they previously had been dealing with just wild fluctuations in revenue.
Yeah.
And by scattering big product launches out across each quarter, they could even that out more. Right. I don't think that's an issue for them now like it was back then. So they can get away with getting everything up in the fall.
It's something that they had to accept too.
I mean, the
reality is that the Christmas buying season does dominate the stuff. Does dominate the most of the product categories that Apple competes in.
Right. So they might as well have their latest and greatest out in time for the holiday buying season. And by rolling all this stuff out in the fall, they cut out that several month window where competitors can rush to get products that have better specs than Apple's out in time for the holidays.
Right. Right. All right. So the other thing then that could come and probably will come at this event is the new Mac Pro, which was officially introduced at WWDC. Phil Schiller made the wonderful and delightful comment, can't innovate my ass.
I just loved that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was completely appropriate use of snark. Well done, Phil.
Yes, it was. It was. And I'm still super excited about this thing. I want one desperately. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get one, but I want one desperately.
I think this would be a great thing to have on your desk.
Well, of course it would. It'd be a great thing for you to have too.
It would. But if only one of us could get one, I would rather have it be you.
Oh, aren't you the sweetest?
Well, you know, it's just one of those things where it's time for you to have that new computer. You know what you need is an ACM fan that loves you so much.
Yes.
That they order you a new Mac Pro
that
out
is
of gratitude.
So what? I need an Apple Contact Machine fan that loves me that much. Yes.
And there has to be someone out there that loves you that much. And you know who you are.
Exactly. You know, what's interesting, my main workhorse computer, my sitting at my desk computer, is a early 2008 Mac Pro. Eight core device. Five and a half years old now. And while it's not getting long in the tooth, it certainly keeps up with everything that Mountain Lion and soon Mavericks will throw at it. But it's I'm having some components finally wear out. But I mean, this machine is 5 years old,
and it's worked hard all five of those years.
It has in fact worked very hard, and it continues to work hard. And it's the longevity of a Macintosh is just out of this world. I mean, you could not do the same thing with a 5-year-old PC unless you did things like upgrade the processors, upgrade the motherboard. So it essentially
basically you turn it into a computer, a new computer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. And it's still much, much faster than my 2011 MacBook Air. I mean, it's not even in the competition.
Well, you have gobs of processors, you have gobs of RAM, you have dedicated video, high-end video card. Of course your Mac Pro is going to be faster.
But it's 5 years. It's just 5.5 years old. Just interesting. It's interesting, and it's one of the things that makes Apple's Mac products worth the quote unquote extra money.
Yeah,
I could still sell it for more than an average, far more than an average PC tower goes for new.
Oh yeah,
that's the kick in the face to me if you're a Windows fan.
Yeah, well, Macs tend to hold their value really well.
Yeah.
And that's because of the way they're built.
Yeah. All right. So that is the media event. We do still have a few specs and things that Apple has not announced on the Mac Pro. So there will be a couple of unveiling things. Like, we don't know specifically what the video cards are going to be. We don't know exactly what kind of RAM options they're going to have, exactly what kind of storage options. Well, there's only going to be one storage option, and that's
right. SSD. So we don't know storage capacities.
Thank you. We don't know storage capacity. And we don't know the speed and specifics of the processors that Apple's using. So there are even though we saw this thing at WWDC, there is information that we are waiting to get, and I can't wait.
Oh yeah, it's going to be fantastic. This is an update that people have been waiting for years.
Yes.
Literally years.
Yes.
And the idea of taking a computer as powerful as the new Mac Pro is and putting in something that is the size of a coffee can.
A little bigger than that, but yeah.
Yeah, but you know,
a couple coffee
about,
cans,
give or take. Holy crap, that's amazing. That's some serious hardcore engineering.
It's about as wide as a coffee can, maybe. A little wider than a coffee can and then about twice as high.
Yeah,
definitely nitpicking.
Well, we have established that you're mostly pedantic, so it makes sense.
Mostly, yes. Mostly. All right. Well, this seems like a fantastic point to segue to our wait for it first rapid fire topic.
Yeah, and I was waiting for like gunshots or something to go along with
that. The bell.
Yeah, that it. I was expecting something more dramatic, but that's okay. The bell totally works. How about
64-bit A7 processor?
You read my mind.
Yeah,
so last week, Qualcomm's chief marketing officer said, "Bah, that A7 thing, it's just a marketing gimmick, 64-bit processors in a smartphone. No one needs that. That's just an enterprise-level thing." And this week, Qualcomm is saying, "Yeah, you know what he said last week? Don't listen to that because it's all a load of crap. And the 64-bit processor in smartphones is totally the future. And we think what Apple did is great."
So you know what's interesting about that is that first of all, someone who's in marketing would trash talk a major partner, a major customer like Apple, because there are Qualcomm chips that go into Apple's phones, not the processor, but the radio chips.
The radio chips, correct. Like
right now, Apple's using the one chip to rule them all. Radio chip that lets the iPhone 5S. I don't know if it's in the 5C, but anyway, that lets one chip be used around the world, in almost all of the different flavors of 3G and 4G and 2G and whatnot.
And I'm kind of disappointed that there's not a sticker on the iPhone box or the 5S box. It says now with Sauron Tech inside.
if Apple ever put stickers, on any of its boxes, that one would be funny. But so it's interesting that Qualcomm would trash talk a customer. I mean, Apple is a competitor, right? Qualcomm makes their own ARM processors, just like Apple designs its ARM processors and then outsources them to Samsung and/or Taiwan Semiconductor.
Right.
But in addition to them being competitors, like I said, they're also a supplier for Apple. So it was surprising that they would do a little trash talking.
Yeah. And maybe they thought since Samsung does it, it's okay. Or maybe he thought because Samsung does it, it's okay. Because Apple is a big client of Samsung's.
Yeah. Well, it's a big client of both companies.
Yeah. And Samsung trash talks Apple all the time. But apparently someone at Qualcomm, or several someones at Qualcomm, thought that it would be prudent to backtrack on what their chief marketing officer said.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Samsung, too, because the original trash talking reminded me a lot of Samsung's usual efforts to devalue anything that Apple's doing. To wit, when the Walter Isaacson's biography came out, Sam's and Steve talked about having cracked a code for making an internet connected TV, having the interface work. And so that Samsung executive in Australia dismissed it as oh, we've had that forever. I mean, without even knowing what it is. It was transparent and a little pathetic.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of reminded me when the Qualcomm folks did this, kind of reminded me of that.
Yeah, it really did have that feel.
Yeah, but they backtracked, so, good for them, I guess.
Yeah, and what's up with our interns? They're supposed to ring the bell so we know to move on to the next topic.
There you go. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So the other thing, then, that I wanted to mention for a rapid fire would be this Nest Protect. Did you see that?
I did, and holy crap, I want one. And when I say want one, I want one for every smoke detector that I have.
Yeah.
This thing is so cool.
It is very cool. So let's tell the folks who Nest is.
Okay, so Nest is a company that was started by Fidel.
Tony Fidel.
Thank you, Tony Fidel. He used to work for Apple. And
he's the godfather or the father of the iPod.
That's right. And so he starts his own company, and he creates the Nest thermostat, which is a programmable thermostat. You can use your computer, you can use your iPhone to control and manage this thing, but it learns.
Yeah, and it had a really simple interface that was effectively the iPod's circle.
Yeah, it's just brilliantly designed, and it learns your patterns, so it can more effectively manage your heating and cooling needs and save you money.
And that was great. 2 years ago or a year ago?
2 years ago, because it came out with the second version earlier this year.
Right.
Yeah. And now they've announced, it's not shipping yet, but it will be soon, the Nest Protect, which is a combination smoke detector and carbon monoxide detector.
SCO.
And it hooks up to your network just like a Nest thermostat does.
Mm-hmm.
So it can do things like tell you when its batteries are low, or when there is some sort of situation that it deems as an alert, it can tell you about that even when you're not home, and it can tell you which room the situation is in. And if you happen to be home and say you're in the living room and you left dinner cooking on the stove and forgot about it, it catches on fire. The Nest Protect in your living room will start talking and tell you that there's now a fire in the kitchen.
Yes. So, yeah, all these devices, you of course want multiple smoke detectors in your house anyway. So all the Nest Protects talk to each other. And they also talk to iPhone apps, right? So you can actually monitor and manage all these things from your iPhone app, which is really nifty. But they are designed to be able to tell the difference between a fire and a cranky toaster.
Right.
So rather than just like going off because your toaster has burned a piece of toast, it'll warn you. And then all you have to do is you can wave your hand beneath the thing and it shuts it off.
Yeah. See, that's great.
Yes. It's really, really cool. And then it also – so there's a little ring of light on it. So, again, they're using the circle thing that Tony made so popular with the iPod's original controller. But the circle of light, when it's going off, it flashes red. So it's got a visual component. When the batteries are going out and need to be replaced, it flashes yellow. So that you don't just have to wait for the darn thing to start chirping at 3 a.m.
Right.
Right. I hate that. I hate the chirp in the middle of the night. That's so
annoying.
It
can send you alerts so you know when the batteries need to be replaced.
Yeah. When you first turn out the lights in the room, it'll flash a status. If it flashes green,
everything's fine.
It means that the batteries are good and that the device is working. And if it flashes
yellow.
And your house isn't burning down. And if it flashes yellow, it means change your batteries. It's just really cool. And they talk to each other and they're aware of what they're doing. Oh, and if you have that Nest thermostat, if it detects a carbon monoxide leak, it'll turn off your furnace.
Right.
Because furnaces are often a cause of carbon monoxide output in the first place.
Yeah. So that's brilliant.
Yeah.
They designed their products to work together, but they're very functional even when they're used as standalone devices.
Yeah.
It sounds so Apple.
It does. And you know, it's interesting to me that since Steve Jobs came back, Tony Fadell is one of the few Apple execs who have left and has been really successful elsewhere.
Yeah, good for Tony.
Yeah, good for Tony. You know, people like John Rubinstein, whom I still have a lot of respect for, has not found success. He didn't find success at Palm, and he didn't find success at HP.
No, he was dealt a really bad hand.
He was at HP, or he dealt himself a hand.
Yeah, Either way. My guess is that he had been led to believe that his job at Palm would go differently than it did.
Yeah, no doubt.
And then when he ended up at HP, well, he was just screwed.
Even Ron Johnson, who had a successful career before Apple, ran into problems at JCPenney. So it's interesting. Tony Fadell has done well. Nest seems like it's doing well. The Nest thermostat is available in Apple stores, which is interesting.
Yes.
And I bet you this new Nest Protect ends up being there too.
Isn't it interesting that there is a subset of really cool products that you can only get directly from the company or through Apple?
Yeah.
Because we have the Nest. Well, no, you can get the Nest other places.
Yeah, you can get it like Home Depot.
Yeah, but the Hue.
The Hue, right.
That's what I was
from Philips.
Yes, that LED programmable lights.
Yeah. Yeah, those are really cool too.
Yes, they are.
All right, so as that bell lets us know, the last rapid fire topic should be, I think, this Galaxy Round.
I see absolutely no purpose in this device at all.
I'm not going to go that far.
I am. I just did.
You know, if it's interesting in that if you want a phablet,
don't use that word.
I lied. I still don't understand why that put you on tilt.
Oh, man.
It's such a useful word. It's so useful. It is.
You have no idea how close we are to needing an explicit tag for today's show.
Yes, I do, because I said it on purpose. But it is such a useful word. It's two syllables that effectively says a large smartphone, which is three syllables. And two syllables is better than three syllables.
Not in this case.
It's so interesting.
Sometimes longer is better. I'm just going to drop that right there.
Right. So anyway, this thing is, if you want a large smartphone, a.k.a. a phablet, having it curved makes it a little easier to hold in one hand. That to me is, that's actually, I'm going to be honest, that's the only reason I can find for this thing. I don't really know why you want a curved display. But they did it, and it is cool that they did it.
And it's a really nice proof of concept. It didn't need to be released as a product because there's no point in this product.
Well, they did only release it in Korea.
Good, because I don't want to see it here.
I do. I want to see it just so I can hold it and test it out. And as much smack talk as I've been talking about Samsung, I don't think they're going to send me one.
No, I don't think they will. No. Probably not.
Probably not.
Which is unfortunate, because you're exactly the person that they should get stuff like this to, so that when they release a product that's really good.
Yeah, but the problem is they won't.
Oh, that's true.
Well, that's just nitpicking, though. But anyway, so it's curved. It uses a flexible AMOLED. Do you call it AMOLED or
AMOLED?
AMOLED. Huh. Whatever. Which, you know, my opinion is that Apple has not used AMOLED for a reason.
I agree.
That's my opinion on AMOLED, but whatever. It's this flexible AMOLED display. The thing is curved. It's at the very least interesting. And you cracked what I thought was a hilarious joke.
Oh, yes. I was curious if Apple released a curved screen iPad. because, and I totally missed the announcement because that would explain exactly why this product was released.
Or you missed the rumor.
I missed the rumor.
You missed the rumor.
I've ruined my joke.
You ruined your own joke, man.
But you know, if you go to the article that Brian wrote, which will be in the show notes, of course, you can read exactly what I said.
Yes.
because I posted it as a comment to Brian's story.
It was pretty funny. So yeah, so you know, to a certain extent, they did this. They did this first, and it seems like they did it successfully.
No. They did it first. I'll give you that.
Well, and it seems to work.
Yeah, well, they made the Galaxy Gear look like it worked in their videos, too.
Yeah, but I wasn't buying that thing from the beginning. You know, there's one thing. There's that roll effect. So you put the thing down on a flat surface, and of course, because it's curved, it rocks. Right? I mean, obviously, it doesn't keep rocking, but it can rock. And if you tilt it on one side, you push down on one side so that it tilts up, about like a second and a half later, 2 seconds later, the time flashes.
And see, now I'm totally seeing the joke. So if the phone is a rockin', don't bother knocking. And that's one of the best things I can say about this. I'm picturing people putting these in their pockets, sitting down, and hearing the crunch as it snaps in half.
Hey, it should be stronger, actually. The curved.
You would think, but they also chose to make it Zune brown.
Yes, they called it luxury brown because nothing says luxury quite as much as brown.
Yeah.
Luxury brown. You know, I guess they're calling it luxury brown because the back is a brown leather stitching, and this thing is like $1,000, so it's not cheap. $1,013 or something like that if you look at the exchange rate, but it is only available in Korea. It's interesting. I find it extra interesting that I'm bagging on it less than you are. You're a little more friendly.
Usually I'm a lot more tolerant.
Yeah,
but I saw this and what I said would give us an explicit tag.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, that's rapid fire. How about the folks at Squarespace?
I like those guys, and I like that they're sponsoring us.
They are sponsoring us. I love that they're sponsoring us. And they're sponsoring us, and you can get 10% off of a Squarespace space because they're sponsoring us. That's a good thing. It's a good thing for
you.
That's
a really good thing. So what do they do, Brian?
Well, Squarespace is a web hosting service that is effectively they're giving you everything that you need. So they're going to host your site. And they're going to give you all of the design tools. They have templates. They have all the stuff that you need. They do. They support e-commerce and digital e-commerce and credit card transactions. And they do all this stuff. And they give you these templates, and you can set up your own site either with, you know, it. Well, listen, if you're going to bother setting up your own space, go ahead and get your own domain. I'm going to throw that in there.
All right.
Yeah, it's yeah. I'm a big believer in having your own domain, and you can do all this stuff really, really easily, and you can start it without a credit card, and I love that. You can do a free trial without giving them a credit card.
Now, they give you all the all-in-one stuff you need to start a site, but they also give you the ability to go in and customize your site template, which I think is great. So that gives you an easy way to know that whatever it is that you have chosen as your base template, you can truly make your own, and your site won't look just like everyone else's.
Right. The templates that they have are designed for you to add your own header image to. You know, you can pick, of course, your own font colors if you want to. Although all their default stuff, you know, one of their lines is that they're democratizing good design. And it's not just a line. It is, I mean, they do such clean, modern interfaces for their templates. I love that.
They do look really nice.
Yeah, you know, they have actually told me that they want to be the Apple of design, and I think they're pretty close to that. And that's really cool. And if you are a CSS person. You can go in. You can actually tweak all the CSS for everything through a what you see is what you get, a WYSIWYG editor, right? That's fine. That's great. But if you're a real CSS person, you can go in and customize all this stuff by hand. You can add in your own code blocks if you want to. The point is that it's got this wide range of customizability from I'm not a web person. I want a great looking site, but I could never design it myself. To the far end where I can design stuff all day long, but here I don't have to.
Yeah, that's right. Really cool.
Then I can go in and tweak everything that I want.
And what's that deal that they're giving our listeners?
10% off. 10% off. If you go, the coupon is ACM10. Or you can click through to in the sponsor block that we have on the show notes at squarespace.com/ACM. And you'll get that 10% off. And the way they charge, it's they do a monthly or yearly kind of thing, and you get a pretty significant discount if you buy a year in advance. And you can use our coupon code on either. So you can either get 10% off your first month, or you can get 10% off the first year.
That's significant.
Yeah.
10% off the whole year. Wow.
Yeah. Squarespace.com/ACM, and the coupon code is ACM10.
Awesome.
10 for October. See how they did that?
That's very clever.
Yep. So there you have it. Check these guys out. I'm still in the process of moving my site over and being really persnickety. I want to make sure that I get everything exactly like I want it, because I'm kind of a princess that way.
Yes, you are. But you're our princess, and your tiara, awesome.
I'm totally a princess when it comes to this sort of stuff. Oh, my God. A precious princess at that.
Yes. Yes, you are.
I am in the process of moving my personal blog over to the site at geektales.com. He says, with a plug.
That's okay.
All right. That's our sponsor. So let's talk about this other thing. We have Microsoft announcing that they're going. I say Microsoft. Steve Ballmer announcing that the Office is going to come to the iPad just as soon as they have a touch optimized interface worked out, and after it comes to Windows, i.e., Windows 8 for tablets.
See, that's such a brilliant move on Microsoft's part. This is great because this will allow them to stay ahead of the curve, make sure that they have Office as the dominant and most relevant Office productivity suite on the iPad, and they'll be out ahead of everyone else that could make competing products that are compatible with Office. Oh, wait.
Well, it's... At the very least, it's not too late.
It may be.
It's interesting. So right now, Microsoft has had this delusion that so many people are clamoring for Office on tablets that that's how they were going to make Surface tablets sell, by keeping Office for tablets limited to Windows 8 and Surface. And it turns out that,
they're wrong.
Yeah, that it was putting lipstick on a pig.
Yeah.
And
they had to build a pig to put the lipstick on.
Yeah, they did, in fact, have to build their own pig. And I have said for a long time now that that Microsoft is so bad at tablets that if they want to make money in the tablet market, they needed to put Office out on the iPad.
And they needed to do it 2 years ago.
They should have done it 2 years ago, that's for sure. And instead, they did earlier this year, they brought Office 365. It's got the worst name ever. Do I still have
that
name?
Well, that's out? Microsoft's special way.
It's a, oh my God. And the funny thing is, if you go search for Microsoft Office in the App Store, you can't find it. I couldn't even find it when I did Office 365, and that's part of the name. Let me actually get that full name here. It's It's called Office Mobile for Office 365 subscribers. That's the name of the app. Office Mobile for Office 365 subscribers is the name of the app. We'll have a link to it in the show notes.
That's just ridiculous.
It is great. Anyway, so they
announced, and it's an iPhone only app.
It's an iPhone only app that they artificially prevent you from putting on your iPad.
Well, in a sense, because they tagged it as an iPhone only app, so that means before you can see it on the iPad, you have to change the default filtering for apps to show everything.
I couldn't find it.
I just did.
You found it on your iPad?
Yeah. But I had to type in Office Mobile for Office, and then I found it. But what I had to do to see it was I switched the filtering to show only iPhone apps on my iPad.
Oh, interesting.
That's what it took to see it.
I downloaded it because it's a free app. It's a free app that requires
an Office 365 subscription.
Right. And I downloaded it, and I could not get my iPad to see it, not in the App Store and not through purchased apps.
That's crazy.
All right. Well, okay. I'm glad that's wrong, because it should at least be available with the 2X and 1X emulation mode.
Yeah, and it looks like it is. But the fact that you had so much trouble trying to find it that you didn't even think it was available, that's very telling.
Yeah, but I'm not
Microsoft
that smart.
Well, you may be a princess, but you're smart.
Precious princess to you.
So yeah, so the fact that you couldn't find it, that tells me that there is a serious problem with the way Microsoft is developing their products. And they're clearly missing the boat.
It should have been a hybrid app to begin with. But whatever. They say they don't have a touch optimized interface for it. And that's because it's available, it's really designed for keyboard and trackpad use on a Surface. That's the problem. They didn't really design it.
So they designed an app for a touch interface device that's designed not to be used with a touch interface.
Not to be used exclusively.
Yeah.
With a touch interface.
So that's just fracking brilliant.
It is, in fact. And I was just, they're so weird. And so in the meanwhile, there are dozens of Office clones available on the iPad. Now, they cannot do everything that Office does. That is a fact. Some of them do most everything. Some of the better ones. But they can't do everything. I mean, Office is still there are things that Office does really, really well. I mean, that's just a fact.
Yeah, that's true. But I think we're far enough into the game that for most people on tablet devices, they don't care because they found other products that do what they need.
Well, the question is whether or not the business world, you know, all that demand that Microsoft erroneously thought the Surface would meet, I'm wondering if it won't. I think that there is demand for Office on the iPad. I guess that's my point, because there are things that Office does really well that are really, really good for some vertical markets, for instance, publishing. And also in multi-user environments, where you've got a lot of people that have to bang on a particular document. And to merely have a company standardize on a single platform, in this case a productivity platform, Office really does have the best tools for that sort of thing. Like, I don't even think it's a contest, to be honest. And don't tell me about Google Docs. I hate working on web apps. And I know you wouldn't have.
You know exactly how I feel about web apps.
Yeah, web apps are fine, but they're nowhere.
No, they're not.
Give me a native app. They're fine for some people. For some people and some things, they're
okay. So now, see, you added qualifiers in.
Do we have latency?
Oh, we probably do.
All right, folks. So we were having a little latency, so we're going to try to get back into it. There are some things that web apps do okay. Will you accept that?
I will accept that in limited situations, web apps can be useful.
If I'm sitting down and I'm wanting to get some real work done, I give me a native app every single time.
Yep, absolutely.
And I tell you, you know, our longtime listeners know that I've been working on a novel forever and a day. And there's going to come a point where that novel goes from Scrivener to Word, because that's the way the publishing industry works. And yes. Once it goes from Scrivener to Word, the live living version of that document will be the Word version, period. And when that happens, I will be very happy if I can work on it properly on my iPad with a Microsoft Office product.
Yeah, that would be cool, especially because the process of using Microsoft Word for writing a book is an exercise in pain. And having done it, I know that pain intimately.
Yeah, but writing a book in Microsoft Word, awful. I can attest to that too. I've worked with Bob Levitis on some Dummies books. You, of course, did your book on
what was the Designer's Guide to Mac OS X.
Thank you, Designer's Guide to Mac OS X.
It was a long time ago. I won't hold it against you much for not remembering the title.
Well, I remember what it was about, but I didn't want to start spouting something off and having it be wrong.
Okay, I'll fair enough. Okay.
Anyway, the point is this: we've both worked with books, and creating them and composing them and writing them in Word is a nightmarish hell. Editing them, especially when it's going back and forth between lots of different people, editing them in Word is okay.
I think you have a much higher tolerance than I do, because I found the editing process with multiple people involved to be a total pain in the butt.
Yeah, but now think about trying to do that with something else. Even something as awesome as Scrivener.
That's true.
It would be much worse.
It would be much worse. So I guess in the grand scheme of things, it was the least painful option, which does not mean it was comfortable.
Yeah,
it just means that the severe pain wasn't as severe as other things would have been.
But no one has come as close to Microsoft in doing these multi-user edits for Excel and for Word and for PowerPoint too.
Yes.
So now, in the meanwhile, Apple's iWork suite, which is Pages, Numbers, and Keynote, mm-hmm. has gotten better and better and better.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that you even have many Word-like features in Pages that you didn't have before that make it possible to actually use it as a collaborative tool.
Yes, although I think Word still has the advantage there, but Apple has closed the gap with the track changes.
Oh, yes,
feature
absolutely.
In particular. Closed the gap, but off Microsoft Office still has the advantage. And I think that the Keynote is orders of magnitude better than PowerPoint. I would rather work with Pages than Word, and I would rather work with Numbers than Word. But there are many things that Excel does way better than Numbers, in particular the complicated
really complicated math. Equations and And if you need to have lots of variables, the macros, that's a big thing too for a lot of people.
Yes, that's a big thing. So for a lot of small person offices, a lot of creative offices, a lot of small companies, certainly home companies, I think that Apple's iWork is going to be more than enough for almost everything. For I think the larger you get in the corporation and the more you're dealing with outside people, the better Office becomes. Dealing,
yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah,
of exchanging of documents, and so it's not too late for Microsoft to do this, but they should do it sooner rather than later and stop pretending that the Office is going to get people to buy tablets that they don't otherwise want.
Yeah, because clearly it's not going to. And I'm still on the fence. I don't know if there's time for Microsoft to no.
Plenty of
that's
time.
Not. I'm still questioning whether or not Microsoft is too late to the game.
Plenty of time. Office we'll is still see. Too dominant on the desktop.
It's very dominant on the desktop, but I have a feeling through virtualization and through a lot of these other Office compatible apps you can run on the iPad. That there are plenty of companies out there that have found that they actually don't need Office on the iPad.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Microsoft. Okay, I'll give you this. Microsoft will not have the share they could have had they been fast out of the blocks with this.
Yep, you're absolutely right.
But they will still. This will help preserve their share on the desktop.
It will, assuming what they give us is better than what they're offering through Office Mobile 365 Mobile Office User Experience for the iPhone Mobile.
Such a silly name. Yeah, that's true. They have to do better than that, which is why I think that Steve Ballmer said that as soon as the touch-optimized interface is designed. I mean, I think he understands that they essentially have to finish rebuilding it from the ground up.
Yeah, I think he also realizes they kind of screwed the pooch.
Yes, hopefully. I don't know. Yeah, hopefully he realizes that.
I think that if he hadn't realized that, we wouldn't have had his statement. And
enough.
I think that we wouldn't have a hopefully proper version of Office showing up.
Fair enough. All right, even with our edits, we're running late.
Yes, we are. So this is probably a good time for us to wrap up.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. Feel free to follow me on Twitter and app.net. I'm JGam at both places. And if you haven't been over to the iTunes store yet to give us a rating for our show, please do, because we love it when you do that.
Please do that. And you can also find Jeff on Fresh Brew Tales. And you can follow me on Twitter at TMOBrian. That's Brian with a Y. On app.net, I'm Brian Chaffin, also with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And stay subscribed, because we love you.
Yep. We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.